Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist. All right, let's get into the stories. Something that's coming up this week, the Kavanaugh hearing. He is the least popular Supreme Court nominee with the public, according to polling. And that usually like the three other least popular were people who did not get approved during their hearing. Yeah. So we'll see.
Well, he could be the guy who helps Trump if anything goes to the Supreme Court about presidential power. You know,
right.
It's like you saw this move from the jump, like what the reason was.
Right. Yeah, because McConnell was like, just don't select Kavanaugh because he has the biggest paper trail and that's going to, you know, slow things down. But Kavanaugh was the dude who had that presidential power thing. So,
yeah.
You know.
Well, and I think when they were talking about, you know, when Kagan was being confirmed, they got 99% of the documents that, like, she handled at the White House. And with Kavanaugh, it's, like, something less than, like, 10%.
Yeah.
Because there's just too much.
Damn.
Yo, he had his hands on all kinds of shit during the Bush administration that they're like, let's make sure. You know, like, they're hiding so much shit. And that's why everyone's being like, what are they hiding? You know, like, with the documents.
Right.
And that I think at the very least, if they want to have some semblance of like equity here, at least let everybody review the documents. But that just shows you how underhanded this whole process is.
What if they're just hiding like Kavanaugh's crayon drawings of George W. Bush? You know what I
right,
mean?
Right,
like,
right.
What if it's like really nothing?
But yeah,
but something.
But
yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
Apparently, the preparations they're going through, they're doing like mock hearings and like staging fake protests.
Really?
Don't let this get you off your game. When suddenly people are, you know, like pulling your card about, you know, X issue or whatever. Or
wow.
Inevitably when people will be there to protest because this is a Supreme Court seat they stole again. And the Democrats are seemingly like okay to kind of pretend like they're going to oppose him. But there have been a lot of people being like, okay, we had a good conversation. No one's gone full out being like, no, I will not vote for him or yes, I will vote for him. But I don't know. We'll see. The math.
The Republicans have the votes, right? So,
well, yeah, they have 51 seats, but I think with John McCain passing away now, it's 50 seats. So,
which is enough, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they need a defection for him not to get nominated. And who knows if that's going to happen. It seems like it might just go down party lines. Let's talk about what a world-class asshole we have in charge of the free world right now.
So we'll just say whatever we want right now?
Yes.
All right. Fuck his hair.
Yeah, right.
Politico has this story where, I mean, we always knew that Donald Trump hated Jeff Sessions because he thinks the attorney general just means the guy who will protect you from the law, I guess, is like his idea.
His personal lawyer.
Yeah, or like just guard dog who'll be like, any legal trouble, apparently the attorney general just helps you skate on all that shit. So they were talking about, you know, if Sessions' recusal, this is from Politico, was his original sin, Trump has come to resent him for other reasons. Griping to aides and lawmakers that the attorney general doesn't have the Ivy League pedigree the president prefers, that he can't stand his southern accent, and that Sessions isn't a capable defender of the president on television, in part because he, quote, talks like he has marbles in his mouth.
That's not fair to Jefferson Beauregard.
Yeah, I mean, look, leave Legal Smeagol alone. You know what I mean? Like, he's doing what he has to do. Also, no, fuck that guy. But let's be – I think what's funny is the whole idea that he's like, oh, his Ivy League pedigree, when Trump is nowhere even close to being any kind of intellectual to be able to sort of throw that around as an insult. Also, you know, Alabama has a lot of his supporters there. I'm surprised he thinks – he's much more well-liked than I'm sure Trump is, but who knows? I haven't really seen polling about that. But this whole thing of him really hating him is just getting more and more intense and intense and intense.
Do you think he's going to get fired?
Well, they think that it probably won't happen until after the midterms because they don't want that to become another thing that will just mobilize more people to vote against him. They'll be like, look, if you're going to do it, wait for the blue wave to crash on the Capitol and then go into full panic mode because at that point, all bets are off. But, you know, it's just Trump doing his little hate. And there's another thing I was reading that Trump really doesn't like his supporters because they're not, like, pretty people.
No,
and
I
so
mean,
this all fits into his, you know, tortured worldview.
Yeah. I mean, he has that narcissism personality disorder where he's just trying to fill a hole that can't be filled with, you know,
with MAGA hats,
with the presidency of the United States. He's still just like, why is Hollywood so mean to me?
Yeah.
Because you're an asshole.
Yeah. But like the biggest asshole maybe in America, the best at being an asshole in the country, potentially. There's also the story where he basically said in a room full of reporters to Bloomberg off the record, I'm really fucking Canada. You know that, right? Like, just like, and they're like,
honestly,
yo, like off the, all right, I guess off the, I mean, I'm gonna report this.
Right. But
that's so funny though.
Said, here's the problem. If I say no, the answer's no. If I say no, then you're going to put that, and it's going to be so insulting, they're not going to be able to make a deal. I can't kill these people, he said of the Canadian government.
Wow.
Off the record, Canada's working their ass off, and every time we have a problem with a point, I just put up a picture of a Chevrolet Impala, because the Impala is produced at the General Motors plant in
Ontario.
So, yeah. Again, off the record, they came knocking on our doors last night. Let's make a deal, please. But...
Dude, this he has such an issue of understanding what off the record, on the record, confidentiality agreement. He doesn't know. He just thinks like, okay, off the record, okay, I'm going to get spicy and this won't get out. Okay, so apparently that was said to a Bloomberg reporter. They didn't report it, but there are other people in the room who heard it and then reported it. Now, I mean, there is, I guess, some sanctity to the journalistic integrity of, you know, taking
the
someone
off, the,
off
record.
The record.
Yeah.
But with this fucking guy...
I mean, it's so funny and sad. You know what I mean? It's like you gotta laugh instead of cry at this, because who the fuck? What is he like? Some kind of super villain? Like, I'm gonna fuck Canada.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I'm just gonna hold up a picture of the Impala. It's like, this isn't a fucking Love and Hip Hop reunion show, like where you get all fucking messy like this. But he's Mr. Reality TV, so I guess he really does think of how. Like, it's the kind of way that if you were scripting out, like, a fun way a shitty president would act, like, it's this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and I think
100%.
He's just like, yeah, I'm just going to hold up the picture, and that'll shut him up.
Mm-hmm.
Tame, or I said Tame Impala. Chevy Impala.
Tame Impala. He likes
but
them,
too. Them,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
He's going to fuck Australia as well.
Oh, shit, mate.
So affirmative action is back in the news because there is a group that is suing Harvard, basically claiming on behalf of Asian Americans rejected by Harvard that Harvard has systematically discriminated against them by artificially capping the number of qualified Asian Americans. Harvard and a lot of Asian American communities are also saying like that this group does not speak for us. And so they're back in the news because the Trump administration Department of Justice just sided with the group that is suing to basically they're trying to end affirmative action.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So that's cool.
They're suing because they were capping the number of Asian American students.
That's what they're claiming. And Harvard's admissions board is claiming that just race is one of a number of different factors that they take into account when, you know, considering an applicant. But they have not provided like specific details of what their admissions policy is, or it can't be broken down into like a systemized, detail-based, like point-based system.
Yeah, they should probably do that though. You know what I mean? In general.
Right.
Just to eliminate any ambiguity.
Right, exactly.
Because then they have the defense like, well, that's like one of the other things.
Yeah.
But like, and what are those other things?
Right.
Yeah.
My mood. Like,
the weather.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, they are asking them to show their work, and I think Harvard thought they did that to a sufficient degree, and anti-affirmative action people are claiming that they didn't. But, I mean, a statement from a Harvard Alumni Association said eliminating race-conscious admissions would disproportionately harm applicants of color, including some Asian Americans.
Yeah.
So, and, I mean, there are other forms of affirmative action that are class-based, that like California and Washington State have tried to engineer classes based on class-based diversity that is also like important to take into account. So like I was just talking about that dude who was talking about, you know, how the upper classes solutions for inequality and all the problems that ail our government and our society are rigged to keep them in power. And he was talking about how people point to China and India over the past couple decades as examples of capitalism doing good and, you know, proving its worth because they have, like, basically, you know, shot up out of nowhere and had all this success. But he was pointing out that there's a massive historic affirmative action program in India to correct for the historic caste system.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, like, that's, it's a combination of these things. And America just thinks, well, capitalism
just do the money
on its
part.
Own will yeah. do, will fix
no.
things.
Doesn't take into account human greed.
Right. Yeah.
A factor.
So, yeah. Affirmative action. There are examples of it being extremely successful and important in, you know, market economies and also in education. So big story from over the weekend. Colin Kaepernick is now the face of the 30th anniversary of the Just Do It campaign. We were all on the edge of our seat being like, who are they going to choose for this campaign?
Were we?
No, no, we were not.
I didn't know.
Didn't know that it was the 30th anniversary.
I guess I didn't know.
But, you know, it's cool that they're siding with Colin Kaepernick instead of the evil NFL owners who are, you know,
Who pay them to right. make all of the uniforms for
right.
every team.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. They are still a, you know, giant corporation that has all sorts of problematic things going on. But, you know, in terms of taking a side in the culture war, I think it's been fun to see the response from the right.
Oh, man, so many people.
So unpredictable. I never
would have thought they would burn their shoes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, after they burned their other Nike equipment. I feel like Nike, when they were like burning their Nike NFL jerseys, was like, all right, motherfuckers,
yeah.
you've started a fight.
We're like, guess what, asshole? We just re-upped the deal with the NFL for mm-hmm. 8 more seasons.
Right, exactly.
So hope you can find those old Reebok jerseys from like the early 2000s.
So yeah, I mean, Fox News was not happy. Tucker Carlson is describing this as an attack against America, and I think we have audio.
It's pretty decadent, actually, I think. I mean, first of all, it's factually ludicrous. You can't give up everything and maintain a Nike contract. But the decadent part isn't even really about Colin Kaepernick. He's an athlete, a young guy. You know, I would give him a pass, actually, on a lot of this. It's the executives profiting from him and his attacks on the United States while simultaneously denying that they are attacks on the United States. So they're saying, you know, he raised the issue of racial discrimination in this country as if it's never been raised before, or as if, you know, the historical problems with that aren't obvious to every single American. Of course they are. This is an attack on the country. So it would be very different if he were saying, you know, I'm protesting this politician or this policy or this specific person for doing this specific thing. But no, sitting during the national anthem way of making a broad-based, generalized, and therefore impossible to rebut attack against the country that made him and Nike rich. And again, there's something really decadent about that. When the most successful people in your society hate the society, you've got a real problem. It's a metaphor for our entire ruling class, many of whom feel that way. They hate and resent the very system that made their prosperity, their success possible. It's a huge problem for all of us.
The amount of work there he's doing to contort himself so that his position of siding with NFL owners is the like
the not
little
the ruling
man.
Class.
Yeah,
yeah.
Is him sticking up for the underdog is amazing. Yeah.
Boy, they do not like when black people have opinions, huh?
No. Not on Fox. Oh my god.
Wow.
I mean, this is they called this a fucking attack on America. Just because but also, he's exercising his right to bring awareness to systemic racism.
Yeah, you have to
country.
Be willfully ignorant, which I would not put past anyone there, to not know what he's protesting. Like to say that there's no topic or issue. Yes, there's not a specific person. Yes, there's not a specific whatever he said politician. But it's so clear that there's a cause, whether you agree with it or not, whether you want to attend to it or not. There's a cause. How do you not see that?
Well, that's the only way they can avoid talking about it is by saying, well, I don't want to engage him on the basis of him bringing up, you know, the violence towards people of color from police or whatever. Mm-hmm. That it's just like, well, no, because this is attacking against the troops. It's a disrespect against the country.
Yeah. Right.
Like, just be like, if you're really going to look like some sane person or be a social critic, why don't you then engage him on the idea of what
And I know it's not the biggest point, but the fact that he said he's sitting during the national anthem, where it's so obvious that he's kneeling, because you know, because he chose to kneel based on talking with someone in the armed forces, so that was more respectful. Is again, it's willfully ignorant. It's ignoring any truth of the issue. And but I have to say, there is something that doesn't quite feel right. There does seem something a little bit exploitative that I guess I would agree with a little bit. That like, yes, it's certainly better than saying, you know, pro NFL or or going with this whole he's disrespecting the America or the troops.
They could
or whatnot.
Have shown J.J. Watt like putting his hand over his heart. Like during the national anthem, and made that the face of their 30. JJ Watt's not a bad guy. Sorry, I don't mean to imply that.
But there is something that does feel a little weird of co-opting a cause, you know. But Nike has done this before, and other big companies do this all the time. And again, you'd rather have it be on the what we think is the correct side of the issue or not.
Well, the answer to all those questions with what corporations are going to do is always for profit. So they're like, it is more profitable. So on one hand, I totally see. It's like, okay, I see what you're doing, but also. It's better to be on the right side.
And especially when it's actually a real issue. It's not like, after 9/11 and Budweiser, running, ads with the American flags and supporting the troops and all that. It is something that obviously is going to get a big response. But on the other hand, it's like this also means that Colin Kaepernick is getting paid, which... it's not being paid for making football. Yeah, for making football. Making football plays. You did not let me finish my sentence. It's not for playing football. Like, he is being paid for being an athlete and an activist. And, that I'd rather have that happen than not happen.
Right.
And, again, I think it'll put it back in the conversation. But obviously, yes, of course. Of course, this was not an uncalculated move where they figured all the free publicity they're getting. I mean, how much usually would you charge Nike to have a discussion this long on your podcast?
Right, exactly.
I mean, that's billions right there.
Yeah.
So especially on this one. Yes,
yeah, exactly.
Of course.
All the free publicity they're getting, they're no dummies over there.
Right.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I mean, the fact that they made this decision, their motives were probably purely profit related. But the fact that they looked at the issue and said, okay, this is what's going to make us the most money, I do think is a sign that at least the right side is winning, because I mean, they wouldn't do that without doing tons and tons of market research.
Right.
And, they looked at the people who are going to be behind this decision. They looked at the people who are going to cut their socks up.
Yeah.
that guy who cut his socks up.
That'll learn him.
What the fuck was he cutting those socks with?
Had a point on Wonkette. The guy was saying because walking with jagged ass socks isn't going to lead someone to go, hey, what happened to your socks? And they'd be like, oh, Nike, because blah, blah, blah. It's like, you're already inviting more discussion about Nike from aggressively fucking your socks up.
I kind of feel bad for the sock cutters, though. I mean, they are pretty powerless. Like, what can you do as a consumer? Let's say you do legitimately... believe that issue. It's like you're kind of powerless. What are you going to do?
If anything,
a big corporation.
Well, you start a hashtag pig socks, which is the most confusing hashtag.
Well, there's this other thing too. Remember, like when Keurig pulled their advertising on certain Fox shows, they're like, we're throwing our Keurig machines out, and people were saying like, if you really want to fuck them over, take your item and then sell that, so then you are getting the profits from that by destroying something. They've already collected your money,
right? And that
not doing anything,
and that means someone is less likely to buy a new one because they're going to buy that one.
But there is a myth on the right that the right is trying desperately to perpetrate that going against their beliefs, going against conservative white supremacist politics, is dangerous for businesses. And, they are focused on one of the headlines on Drudge this weekend was NFL ratings expected to go down again this year, which would have been true whether or not there was this controversy, because NFL ratings, along with all TV ratings, have been going down pretty steadily on average. Like when you look at the mean, they've all been going down because more and more things are on streaming and, you can play video games. There's just all sorts of reasons TV ratings are going down, but they want to focus on that because, we'll talk a little bit later, but they are the smaller group in a cultural landscape where they're having to, do a lot of work and a lot of contorting to make themselves seem a relevant and important and, you know, like they are the underdog, I guess.
Yeah, always the victim. Right. Always the victim.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. Speaking of things that aren't normal, so book Fear by Woodward is out, Bob Woodward, and it's just full of mind-blowing details with regards to the Trump White House. So let's just take a look at a couple.
There are so many.
There's just so much stuff in here. I'm just going to pull quotes from the Washington Post article because they were the ones who had access to the book because Woodward is obviously a Washington Post reporter. They talk about Trump sitting down to a mock interview of like what the questions Mueller would ask him and how he would perform. So his lawyer Dowd peppered Trump with questions about the Russia investigation and kept provoking stumbles, contradictions, and lies until the president eventually lost his cool, shouted, "This thing's a goddamn hoax," and at the start of a 30-minute rant that finished with him saying, "I don't really want to testify."
Right.
So
the next part of that, when they say that Jay Sekulow and John Dowd went to Mueller's office to talk about like why they probably don't want him to interview, is amazing, because he's saying, "I'm not going to sit there and let him look like an idiot." And you publish that transcript because everything leaks in Washington, and the guys overseas are going to say, "I told you he was an idiot. I told you he was a goddamn dumbbell. What are we dealing with this idiot for?" "John, I understand," Mueller replied, according to Woodward.
Oh, my God.
So
we even, all understand.
Even Mueller's like, "No, I mean, I get why you wouldn't want this guy, but sorry.
Right. Yeah.
Them's the rules."
And
or, I mean, if there are rules, who knows anyway.
Woodward is the guy who brought down Nixon through Watergate and his investigation into Watergate. So it's important to, like, this is somebody who has some, you know, frame of reference of like how a corrupt and fucked up White House operates.
Right.
So he also, there's a story about how John Kelly would frequently lose his temper and told colleagues that he thought the president was, quote, unhinged. In one small group meeting, Kelly said of Trump, quote, "He's an idiot. It's pointless to try to convince him of anything. He's gone off the rails. We're in crazy town. I don't even know why any of us are here. This is the worst job I've ever had." End quote.
Wow. And just to be clear again, this is not like a Taco Bell in Topeka. This is the White House.
This is the White House. Okay. This is John Kelly being like, "This is the worst job. I hate it."
Yeah.
He's
well,
so
why don't
dumb.
You resign?
Right.
Who cares? I mean, he's already took. He's already shown himself to be a disgrace too. So I don't think, you know, John, you go do yourself a favor too, and why don't you resign? Because it's not like you're the. When everyone's like, "Oh, he's the one holding it all together." Is he even?
I don't know, though. Who the fuck would come in and run things?
Dennis Rodman.
Right? Yes. Like, what would it look like? Like, would we all just be, I don't know. I just don't know who we want in that role, because it has to be someone that Trump respects.
Well, anyone who would want
but
that.
It's, but
at
it
this
even
point.
Sounds like John Kelly can't even get him. So it's not like there's anyone actually keeping it together.
Yeah. If, no,
if John Kelly's like, he doesn't even fucking live, what's the fucking point?
Yeah. No, he's
so yeah. What's the point of you being there anyway?
Very frustrated. In terms of how Trump thinks about the people around him, the book says that he does an impression of General H.R. McMaster behind his back, puffing up his chest and exaggerating his breathing as he impersonates him. And he once said McMaster dresses like a beer salesman because he doesn't wear expensive suits. And he called Attorney General Jeff Sessions a traitor, complained everyone's trying to get me, and also called Sessions, quote, mentally retarded.
Yeah. He said, "This guy is mentally retarded. He's this dumb Southerner. He couldn't even be a one-person country lawyer down in Alabama."
Yeah.
And who picked him again for
right, exactly. Yeah. The other thing about Wilbur Ross, he said, like, he said Trump told Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who actually looks like a person who's rotting from greed inside.
Right.
He said, Trump.
He's the guy who lied to Forbes, right?
I think we talked about, how his lies about being a billionaire to try and get the Forbes list. And he's actually one of the biggest criminals in that administration.
Right.
But he's just been so stealth about it. He's not like the Scott Pruitt ilk of just doing it out in the open. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he told Wilbur Ross, who's like older than him, goes, "I don't trust you. I don't want you doing any more negotiations. You're past your prime." Which, that makes sense. But again, these are the people that you're hiring.
The best people. Only the best people.
The other amazing one, did you read the one about Gary Cohn? like stealing stuff off his desk?
No. What?
So, okay. So Gary Cohn has basically, because this dude is so, you know, mentally not there all the time, there was a thing. He said, according to Woodward, this is in the Washington Post thing, he said, Cohn, quote, stole a letter off Trump's desk, end quote, that the president was intending to sign to formally withdraw the United States from a trade agreement with South Korea. Cohn later told an associate that he removed the letter to protect national security and that Trump did not notice that it was missing.
Wow.
And that's then CNA, awesome. CNN also reported on this more. And he, from Cohn, it said, I stole it off his desk, Cohn told an associate. I wouldn't let him see it. He's never going to see that document. Got to protect the country. So that's how we're doing it. It's just like, you know. Yeah.
And the reason
just steal the desk.
Yeah, right.
Just take it off.
Here's an anecdote about why they might be worried about national security with him in charge. The president once phoned Defense Secretary James Mattis and said, let's fucking kill him, after Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad launched a chemical attack on civilians. Let's go in. Let's kill the fucking lot of them,
mm-hmm.
Trump said. And yeah. They were like, okay, so that's not how this works. That's against international law. The way this was reported is because he basically was granted interviews by people who were familiar with the situation on the condition of what's called deep background, mm-hmm. which means that he can write what they tell him. He just couldn't reveal the particular sources, mm-hmm. but he's like, this was a person who was there,
right.
and saw this. This is not like hearsay. This is like right. direct reporting. I'm just not allowed to say.
I thought
who
all
it was.
Anonymous sources were made up, though.
Right. Yeah. That was fake news.
Oh. Be careful.
So
whoever this anonymous source is, that he needs to go to jail.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know who this guy is.
Right.
But can we go back to the beer salesman thing? How does a beer salesman dress? And how would Donald Trump know how a beer salesman dress? He doesn't
right.
drink.
Right.
He doesn't pay people.
Yeah.
Was that even a profession? Like yeah. a door-to-door, because you think he's thinking of a time when he's still engaged with the normal world.
Right.
So like in the 60s, were there door-to-door beer
I'm imagining sales? Like one of those kids trying to raise money for like their like a softball field trip.
Right, right, right.
Hello, ma'am. My name is...
Would you like to buy this beer?
This Coors Light
Yeah,
case.
We have either Hershey's chocolate, giant Reese's Pieces.
Whatever you want. Man, but I'm buying that beer. I'm buying that beer. Yeah, a lot of these like sort of excerpts are just...
But also, Trump's suits are terrible.
Yeah.
Like, Trump doesn't dress well. His clothes aren't well tailored. He's got these super long jackets and
like
ties. He looks terrible.
Pants.
He does seem to have a double standard with regards to other people and himself.
Sure.
I've noticed. I don't know. That's just trademark.
One last one about Ivanka, though, that I really like is that there's an interaction with her and Steve Bannon. He goes, "You're a goddamn staffer," Bannon screamed at her, telling her that she had to work through Priebus like the other aides. Quote, "You walk around this place and act like you're in charge, and you're not. You're on staff," end quote. Ivanka Trump, who had special access to the president and worked around Priebus, replied, quote, "I'm not a staffer. I'll never be staffer. I'm the first daughter."
Speaking of messy drama, a lot of shit is going on Capitol Hill today. The Kavanaugh hearings are ongoing, getting pretty contentious. There was Pat Leahy implying that Kavanaugh was given hacked Democrat emails to prep for past hearings.
Yeah. Well, so basically when Kavanaugh was working at the White House for Bush, you know, part of his duties was preparing Bush appointees, nominees to guide them through the judicial confirmation process. And he was saying, like, you know, part of it is trying to figure out what senators are going to ask during the hearings to kind of make sure everyone's prepared. But Pat Leahy was basically saying, like, you worked with a dude who stole emails from me. And you gave him, he gave you information on like very specific pointed things I wanted to talk about. And you use that to like your advantage to kind of figure out however you're going to spin it. And there was like this whole very tense back and forth where like Brett Kavanaugh was trying to play dumb, but Pat Leahy like had documents in front of him, was like, is this email not from him talking about like with my email in there? And he's like, well, let me see. And he like just took
and
the
read
paper
extremely
slowly. Like, yeah, like you could tell he was doing that thing where he was like, okay, what the Brett, what the fuck you gonna say here? He's like, oh, I'm CC'd here. Okay. And Pat Leahy is so, I mean, he's also someone who is slipping into senility before our eyes. Like watching him and Chuck Grassley go back and forth was very painful. But yeah, that was like a very painful moment. There's another one where he was saying, like, did you know about these warrantless surveillance programs that the Bush White House was going to engage in, like post 9/11?
Right, the Patriot Act.
Right, and he was saying like, oh, well, there are a few, I don't know. Like in 2004, he said he knew nothing of it. And then Leahy played him a tape from like 2004 or 6 or something. And then he was like, so at that time, you're saying that's when you found out about it? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, well, when did you start talking about these kinds of programs? Was it maybe after 9/11? And he's like, oh, well, I don't know. And he looks at Chuck Grassley and he's like, well, the chairman has made some documents basically committee confidential, but I believe if this were made public, this would jar your memory in a way that you would be able to answer me very clearly.
Right.
And then Chuck Grassley was like, it was like this whole, it literally was the sound of that whole thing.
Yeah.
It got a little hot in there. But then Lindsey Graham.
On the Republican side, yeah, what kind of questions are they asking?
Well, you know, Pat Leahy's like, where'd you get these hacked emails, blah, blah, blah. And right. then Lindsey Graham's like, did you hug your kids last night? And what did you say?
Kavanaugh specifically said, and this is important information, guys, that he gave his daughter a special hug.
Yeah, she gave him one.
She gave him a special hug. But they also keep asking him about 9/11. Like, one Republican senator was like, what were you doing on 9/11? And then another was like, there was that fateful day when two planes struck the Twin Towers and one struck the Pentagon down here. Like, it was like, yeah, no, we remember 9/11. Like, yeah. You don't have to jog his memory.
Well, they got
to
give
it him. It wasn't the Hindenburg.
Right. Which I also saw. But yeah, I think they had to give him that breathing space because, like, after the Democrats grill him, although Dianne Feinstein could have gone a little bit harder, then they level it off by being like, and when you read To Kill a Mockingbird, you actually didn't say the N-word even in your head as you read it, correct? Because that's how right. not racist you are. Like, right. they were bringing, for some reason, he kept talking about To Kill a Mockingbird right. and how, like, woke he, it was a strange thing. But again, this is all, it's all theater.
Right. And just to kind of make the stakes clear, because his background, he is very anti, like, Trump probably won't have to testify or, you know, be indicted if he is nominated. Right.
right. Well, yeah, that, I think that's the other thing is he has a very generous view of executive power. And
right.
basically like, yeah, when you're president, you're king of everything. So but hiding under the idea of like, well, you can't be distracted. But this yeah. man can't even color the American flag correctly.
And then apparently there was this case, Roe v. Wade, that people keep talking about.
You should have heard him basically give the Wikipedia answer to it. Because right. like Lindsey Graham was like, you know, Roe v. Wade. And he was just like, Roe v. Wade was a case of, like, it was right. so odd. We're like, okay, we get it. You guys worked on this before.
Right.
But yeah, there's a lot of issues that he would probably be a tie-breaking vote in the wrong direction, especially when you look at things like labor and reproductive rights and the like.
Let's talk about the anonymous op-ed in the New York Times.
The what?
So, have you heard about this? Have you seen this?
Hey, have you guys seen this? You guys heard about this?
So a high-ranking White House official has taken the drastic step of, you know, reporting that they are in a perpetual state of like a soft coup where they just protect us and the president from his worst inclinations and that there were whispers of the 25th Amendment early on.
A soft coo is the sound that pigeons make.
Right. So, right. It is. Yeah. So very
yeah, exactly. It's just kind of nice and white noisy.
And so, I mean, this has kicked off a full-on game of Clue in the White House where people are like examining the language. The writer uses the word lodestar, which is kind of a weird and specific word that apparently Vice President Pence has used multiple times in the past, and he is probably the person who would have the most to gain if Trump left office. But
he's probably also used it most on speeches that were like spelled phonetically with pictograms or whatever written by right. someone else.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. But apparently, lodestar is a piece of military terminology, so it could also be any of the hundreds of people who have military backgrounds. Who
well, yeah, because the title senior. That they use to describe a senior aide could just be like hundreds of people.
Yes.
So it's, yeah, I think it's a large group. Could be a nobody. It could be a somebody.
Right. And
the point is we should be very excited that unelected career bureaucrats, famously the chillest people,
right.
are shadow running the government.
Right. That's kind
of... Oh, you
of...
chose to move to D.C. at 21?
right.
awesome.
It seems like that's what they were expecting, or based... That seems to be how people took the intention of the op-ed, is that they just wanted credit for the fact that they are doing the right thing. I feel like there are plenty of cynical ways that this could be viewed, though, either, you know,
yeah.
as somebody... First of all, like... planting words specifically to implicate other people.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
As like internal politics yeah. within the staff of yeah, like, let's get yeah. Pence's speechwriter fired or whatever.
Right. And also, I mean, this is coming out. I mean, this was submitted last week, but it is hitting at the same time as the Woodward book, which, you know, has a bunch of specific names talking shit about the president. So if you were behind one of those people, you had some sense that this book was coming out that was going to make somebody in front of you look bad. And then you planted an op-ed that seemed like it was could have been written by them or just to like further infuriate the president. That I don't know. It just seems weird that we're just kind of taking them at their word.
Well, like on one side, I know like a lot of liberal people were like, oh, that's fucking dope, man. Like, I'm glad there are people trying to do it. On the other hand, too, you can look at it and be like, this is also kind of terrifying, too.
Do you know people that felt the former?
No, I think the initial reaction was sort of like, holy shit, man. Yeah, like fucking stop this guy or whatever. Because on the surface,
shallow state.
Yeah, because on like, you know, when you hear about military like generals being like, yeah, they told me to do something, but fuck that. I'm not going to do it.
Right.
Which makes sense because they know when their military expertise, like to take orders from the president when he's saying like, yeah, let's just execute heads of state or whatever, or do things like that. That is completely bonkers shit. But at the same time, when you hear about like the military not taking orders from like the president, like that can slowly turn into some other kind of military coup problem.
Yeah.
But not that's really not sort of the, this is such a bizarre case because you have someone who is doing things that are completely out of the normal and completely divorced from the reality of the like the diplomatic situation or whatever the actual world situation is, that it's hard to sort of look at him and go like, oh, this is fucked up. It's kind of unnerving.
Yeah, and, I mean, that it seemed to be as much like, it'd be one thing if they were just like, we think this guy makes not sensible decisions that are uninformed, so we're doing our best to keep things level-headed because he's impetuous or whatever. But it seemed to be kind of shadow saying like, we believe this man has some form of dementia or dissociative, like degenerative disease of the brain, but don't worry, we're going to like keep things running until he, you know, his head explodes or he's indicted or someone else is elected. And it feels like that is actually specifically what the 25th Amendment is for.
Right.
You know? Like rather than just being like, we disagree and he's a bad guy.
Right.
He gets mad.
Yeah. I mean, Miles, you were saying kind of this could be viewed as a cry for help to Congress because they're just not doing their
job. If this is for real, right? Congress should be like, hold the fuck up. There are people in the cabinet or in the White House who are just out there being like, yo, this guy is wholly unfit. You would call them and be like, please tell us about what's going on at the White House.
Right.
Please tell me what you know, what you have seen, because as part of the Congress, we can check the presidential power. And if this person is that unfit, we need to know so we can do what we can to whether impeach that or just figure out, bring to light what is actually going on.
Right.
But again, I think the person who wrote this op-ed, like who are the, if they really felt like this, who are they going to go to in Congress?
Right.
There's, especially before Kavanaugh is confirmed. I feel like whatever suddenly out of nowhere righteous action that might happen is not going to happen until they get their Supreme Court.
Yeah, and there's so many Trump hacks in Congress that who do you know you can trust to tell that to, and they don't immediately go to the White House and be like, hey, this guy just said this shit.
Right.
You need to figure this out. But I think that could be the other thing too, because I think part of it was saying like the people need to come together too, and maybe that's us putting pressure on Congress now to like really look into this more. But with everything that we've read, and even just the last 3 days, like with the Woodward excerpts and now this, you think that Congress would be like, it sounds like this guy is really fucking up, as if we didn't know that already.
Right.
But now, like, how are they going to hide and completely abandon their responsibility to actually have any kind of power to look at the presidency and say like, okay, we need to look at this a little bit and figure out what to do?
There was a New York Times profile of Paul Ryan a couple weeks ago where he basically expressed a similar thing where he was thinking of himself as sort of the last line of defense because he was saying, man, you guys have no idea how bad, like how many catastrophes I've averted.
Right.
Like essentially like
it could have been way worse.
Right. Yeah. It could have been way worse. Like I'm here to prevent the president from ending the world. It seems like that's how everybody on all sides is thinking.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, maybe this person is just trying to bring it to a head in some way, because there's no way that they wrote this and thought Trump wouldn't have a reaction.
Right? Yeah, yeah, right.
I mean, so much of like, I feel like right-wing use of the media is like to communicate with or provoke him specifically in a way that you can't in a face-to-face meeting, but like headlines, and that is how you get to him. So it's like, what do they want out of him? You know, like, and him calling, like, is this treason? Or like the New York Times, like, I'm going to demand them legally that they tell me. Or it's like, I don't know where that goes.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, other people think maybe, like, if maybe it could be Don McGahn, because he has a knack for getting things out there. And this could also serve as a distraction from Kavanaugh's hearings, which aren't going that great.
Right.
And now everyone's going to be like, who's the op-ed?
Right.
Who is this op-ed? You know, like, and because, you know, Don McGahn is close friends with Brett Kavanaugh, that people have seen it as a distraction to that. People have seen it as a right-wing way of getting people to believe in this deep state conspiracy even more, that there is like this other government working against Trump too. But at the very least, we can see that the dysfunction has reached fever pitch.
Right.
But again, it's like one of those things, man. We've been knowing how bad this is and how awfully this administration's been running, that I guess maybe it's just to get Congress to run out of like rhetorical defenses of as to why they don't need to investigate the president or why they don't impeach him. Be like, I'm sorry, I have an op-ed. There's an op-ed from people in the White House saying like,
well, like, help.
This thing is melting down.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're still not going to do anything?
Right. But it seems, I mean, yeah, the New York Times credibility has been so well called into question in a that sort of fake Trump actualized fake news way that I feel like it's not very hard for them to just be like, you know, the New York Times refuses to say the name. We don't believe this is real.
Right.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the idea of normalization could be raised in relation to basically every Trump story that we're talking about or have talked about in the past month on this podcast. But I was listening to this podcast, Rational Security, that's hosted by a bunch of, you know, professors and analysts and experts on national security and who have worked their whole careers in the national security apparatus. And they were just marveling over the fact that Trump openly called for Sessions to stop going after people who are loyal to Trump and like pushing him to go after Democrats because it's bad for the Republicans in the lead up to the midterms.
Right.
And they were just saying, like, that's just textbook corruption.
Yeah.
That's like what, if this was on some secret tape of him telling his attorney general, stop going after my people, go after these other people because it's better for me personally, then it would be grounds for impeachment. But because he does it on Twitter and we're so used to him just tweeting the wildest shit ever that like it just doesn't even register. Like no, they were saying like nobody even wrote about the fact that he did that.
Right. Yeah. Cause it's just been like, oh, here he goes. Like,
right.
That's how everyone's taking like baby's whining again.
Yeah, yeah.
When it's not like the president is trying to fucking melt down the Republic.
The president profoundly doesn't understand how law or morality works.
Right.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Yeah. Like that's how we're approaching it. Yeah. It's true.
This dummy needs a nap.
Yeah. There's this article in the New York Review of Books. It was about global warming, but it was talking about the fact that I'll just read the quote. The great Dutch writer and historian Geert Mak once told me that in 1933, the Dutch newspapers were full of stories of the threat of Nazism. Yet by 1938, those same papers were all but silent on the subject. Sometimes it seems threats to our future become so great that we opt to ignore them. And also, I think it's like sometimes it's just you get tired of a story or you just get used to the story or like the temperature in the room gets heightened to a point that you don't even really notice when like a certain line is crossed.
Cooking lobsters in cold water, right?
Right, you know, exactly.
Just slowly turning it up.
Yeah,
I don't know why it's always frogs, they say.
Right. Yeah.
That's you don't eat frogs.
That's for
that
poor
way.
People.
Yeah, lobster is what you would cook that way.
Right.
Yeah. And then I think that's what also makes me think too, you know, like maybe the Republicans do know that the clock is ticking for Trump and they do know that something's probably going to go down. And then this is the Kavanaugh thing is just the last thing they're going to get out of this is just to get him confirmed. Like, that's another reason why
I
they
feel like they've
through.
Had that feeling, though, for 18 months and that they are just like people at a casino in one of those like cash grab things with a wind tunnel where they get a minute to like grab for 20s, but like they keep adding time to it.
Right.
Like, this is insane. There's now just 20s kind of buried in the corner. I've got most of them, but like, I'm obviously not going to stop grabbing the 20s until they let me out. But oh my God, like,
they
keep giving me time.
And with regards specifically to the Sessions Trump relationship, just a year ago, Lindsey Graham was saying it would be the beginning of the end of Trump's presidency if he fired Sessions. And now he sees that tweet. He sees no one's responding to it. Now he's saying, well, he deserves an attorney general he can trust. So he's just like We'll let you fire him after Kavanaugh gets approved.
I don't know what's going on with Lindsey.
And apparently Lindsey Graham was on some show yesterday saying, sort of laying out a more detailed groundwork for the firing of Sessions, saying that he bungled the family separation story. So,
oh, I love that. They don't give a fuck, but then they're like, let's just pin it on that guy.
Right, right.
We'll do it. We like the idea of the child separation, but then let's just act like we don't. Right. And then Jeff Sessions.
From a PR standpoint, it wasn't handled as well as it should have been.
Right. There are summer camps, though. As they were saying on Fox. So.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. And so there's a story in the Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago about how Qatar is seeking to influence American policy now. And basically they've realized that because we don't have a process-driven institution running the country, and instead we just have like a cult of personality, like one addled megalomaniac, that like they just need to get to people around him. So they've spent $13 million lobbying people who they know just like hang out with him, lobbying people at Mar-a-Lago, putting op-ed pieces where he might see them. It's basically the equivalent of putting billboards up in his eye line, like right. that you know or he might see, because it's just because
that's how predictable this whole
yeah
thing
it's is. Just like he's the guy, and right. this is a corrupt authoritarian style government, so we just need to like get in front of him somehow. And so they paid for Alan Dershowitz, who has no like official role other than like dude Trump talks to a lot.
Right. And the guy who just makes up cool legal theories to be like, oh, no, he's cool. He's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yeah. They flew him to Qatar and he wrote a positive op-ed about them in The Hill, and then was like, when it was discovered that this was all part of a lobbying effort, he was like, if I had known that they were doing this because they thought I would influence the president, I would not have gone.
Okay.
But it's just like, yo.
Yeah, because the Qatari Board of Tourism really needed the Alan Dershowitz fucking right. seal of approval to get right. people to, what the fuck is he thinking?
Well, he right. can't hang out in Martha's Vineyard anymore, so he was right. like, what's another cool yeah. place I can spend summers? Qatar.
Right, right. Will they be cool with yeah, me? Yeah.
I guess Doha is the new Martha's Vineyard.
That's what they say. Mike Huckabee is also one of his friends that they're trying to influence.
Cool friends.
Yes.
It's, yeah.
Funny but, dude. Funny
I mean, because they were also, you know, flirting with the idea of floating Jared some money to handle his debts, too. So
right.
you've seen how Qatar has kind of entered the picture here and there to try and get some influence. But, man, that's just so, like, I guess the game is so elementary that, you know, the tactics here are just like, dude, just get to him through his friends.
Right.
It's yeah. like how, like, I think any person starting out trying to figure out how to infiltrate something is like, I guess I can get through their friends. Like, if you're like a SoundCloud rapper and you're trying to get your fucking mixtape heard, you're like, well, who does Dre hang out with? Okay,
right.
I'm gonna hang outside the
exactly.
Apple Music offices, yeah. and I'm gonna offer every person out there $50 to take my mixtape, just to take it. You know what I mean? It's the same sort of. The logic is very simple here.
It's like taking a catering job at like a studio head's daughter's. Like
right.
bat mitzvah and like
exactly.
sliding a script under the toilet or whatever.
Right.
You know, I do drive by this billboard kind of often that just has a picture of a dude with a hat on, and it just says at Chaz Fusion, and it says like, I will entertain you. And like, I keep, at first I was like, who is that? This is
right.
so funny to buy
right.
a billboard. Like, it's such a tall billboard. And it's in a strange neighborhood that doesn't have a lot of billboards. And then I was like, I'm kind of interested. Who is Chaz Fusion?
Who is
like,
Chaz Fusion?
It seems like he could entertain me, you know?
And yeah. who
he got my attention, Chaz?
Did you find out? Oh man, we're giving him all this free press.
Yeah, I know. I might be misremembering the handle, so don't worry. He'll have to pay me. I'm trying to sign him, basically.
Yeah.
28% is standard.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.